Well, you are listening to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast, episode 45.
You remembered to look.
What?
You remembered to look.
I remembered to look ahead of time. We need to have some type of celebration when we get to, like, let's say 100 episodes. We'll have...
Perfect.
We'll have merch. Remember when we like talked about 20 episodes or 30 episodes ago? Hey, we should have like mugs. And
that's right.
And now we have one listener and we still don't have mugs.
Hey, we've got at least a dozen, I believe. Anyways, thanks for tuning in, whether it's on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you're listening. My name is Andrew. With me as always is Corland.
Hello, hello.
And Cameron.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyways.
Cool cats and kittens.
Oh, you cool cats and kittens. Don't say that. So here's what's funny. Speaking of that, you know, for our Sunday gatherings outside, we've bought this FM transmitter, which basically, yeah, you like set your antenna to a certain height, and then you choose your radio, 102.3. And then within a 2 kilometer range, anyone who tunes in can hear that. But I jokingly, in like the announcement video, was like, you know, North Peace Radio. And I think I had a few people that like legit believed, like, you guys are starting a radio station? No way. I'm like, no.
Started small.
Coming to you live for 1 hour on Sundays. All right. Yeah. Pew, pew, pew. So no, if you were one of those people and you're listening, we don't have our own radio station.
We just have our own radio station on Sundays.
On Sundays, 102.3.
NPMB FM.
Yeah, I like it. Anyways, so if you are new to the podcast, we like to talk about different aspects of theology or the Bible or culture and what it means to be a Christian. So today we have a really interesting topic from a really fascinating passage in the Bible. And this has come up to me a few times, like throughout the years, like, can you please explain like what on earth is going on here? And so we want to talk about the Nephilim, today. And so many of you listening probably know that term or you're like, oh yeah. Okay. So in Genesis 6, it talks about, I'll just read it. So this is, right before, you know, Noah is introduced and the flood takes place, and it's talking about just increasing sinfulness on the earth. And so I'll just read the first couple verses of chapter 6. So it said, when man began to multiply on the face of the land and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of man were attractive, and they took as their wives any they chose. Then the Lord said, my spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he's flesh. His day shall be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of man, and they bore children to them. These were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. And then it goes on saying that, you know, God saw that basically every intention of people's hearts was evil, and he regretted making mankind. And then he says, you know, I'm gonna blot them out, essentially. But those first few verses are the ones that there's a lot of like debate and wrestle over, like, mm-hmm. What the sons of God, first of all, who are they? They went into the daughters of men, they had kids, these are the mighty men of old, and what does Nephilim mean? So we are going to definitively answer that today. So I don't know, initial thoughts, guys, or like, have you wrestled with this passage before, or?
I don't think I would say that I've wrestled with it. I think for me, it has been one of those things where after reading it, it was like, I don't understand, but okay. Like, it's there, but it wasn't a crazy, like, it's nothing I got hung up on. Sure. In the past anyways. So
yeah. Yeah, I even read Genesis not long ago.
Well, you named your son Nephilim, right?
This is middle
nickname. Yeah. Sasha N. I read it a few months ago, and it was one of those, I admittedly kind of just went over it and be like, it's a little weird, but what's not in Genesis? So, yeah, I didn't get hung up on it either, but it is pretty interesting, and we will not definitively stand on one viewpoint, but there are really interesting viewpoints from very gifted scholars that I think we can highlight.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's good to remind ourselves, there's a lot in the Bible that we read from like a Western. So think about the culture that is in the West. It's very naturalistic. It's very scientific. It's very like, you know, okay, the natural world exists, and our culture, not church culture, but sometimes even we lean this way. It's like, no, there's nothing spiritual. Angels, demons, heaven, hell. Like, we're just very like what my five senses, what that's what's real. And then you read the Bible, and like, this is not the, I mean, for goodness sake, in chapter 3, there's a talking snake, and like, right? So there's a lot in here. A guy gets swallowed by a whale. There's like stories in here that you go from a Western naturalistic point of view. This is, we shouldn't get just hung up on this. Like,
no kidding.
It's not the whole Bible, but much of the Bible is about this spiritual realm and miracles and, you know, angels and demons and spiritual creatures. And you read the book of Revelation and there's all of these creatures and all. So I think part of the reason we come to passages like this and we go, what? Is because we have grown up in that kind of worldview where we, you know, we don't like to, or we downplay the weirdness of stuff. Right? Because we've probably all know Christians who maybe go too far the other way, who are like, I'm going to chase after angels. And we're like,
sure.
And we just feel really like
cautious
about that. So right out of the gate, we just have to go, this is an Eastern book written in the Middle East. And that kind of culture, this was no problem for them. It was like, oh yeah.
Yeah, I know. Even the way it's written, it just, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days. Like, it's stated as if they would have known exactly what they were talking about.
Yeah, right? They're like, oh yeah.
Yeah. And I saw the church post, you're going to be going through Genesis in the next little bit, which I think will be really interesting. And I like how you said it is, the lens that we look through is so important. And Eastern cultures, there are some that are very, very dark and very, very problematic, but from, and it's anecdotal, but from the converts I've seen come from Eastern religions, they've had a much easier time accepting the gospel, and actually even to the other end, pushing back on, you know, Western missionary tactics, saying like, you're missing out, like you're not even selling it the way it should be. So when I read this again yesterday and picked through it a little bit, and thinking through and how this story would have been communicated, like orally, it would have been a part of what was normal. So when you say like they were on the earth and they are, it's also interesting because, and I guess we can just jump right into some of the different theories, but I mean, one of the more common, at least in what I found, is that they were actually offspring of fallen angels, after interaction with human women. And that could rub people the wrong way and really kind of, if you're looking at it, quickly say, nope, that seems impossible.
Yeah.
Have you heard that before?
Yeah. So, and we'll get into all of them, but there's like views that it's, you know, they were just kind of kings of old, you know, who were kind of seen as divine, but not really. And then there's a view where they're from the line of Seth, these men. And then there's this view that, okay, when it talks about sons of God going into the daughters of man, which is talking about intercourse, obviously, and they bear children, there's this view that no, these are demons, essentially, fallen angels. And the reason there's, you know, when you get to the New Testament and you get to two passages that could be supporting that, Jude verses 5-7 talks about, it says, I want to remind you, although you once fully knew it, that Jesus, who saved the people of the land of Egypt, afterwards destroyed those who did not believe, and the angels who did not stay within their own position of authority, but left their proper dwelling, he has kept in eternal chains under gloomy darkness until this judgment of the great day, just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the surrounding cities, which likewise indulged in sexual immorality and pursued unnatural desire, served as an example. So some have said, well, Jude is talking about Genesis 6. Yeah. And, you know, these angels who didn't stay in their rightful positions of authority. And then the example is given, you know, just like Sodom and Gomorrah, who indulged in sexual immorality. So they said, ah, okay, so see, these these demonic beings were guilty of sexual immorality. And then 2 Peter 2, I'm not going to read the whole thing, like it's 10 verses, but it starting in verse 4, "For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to chains of gloomy darkness to be kept until the judgment, if he did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah with 7 others, brought a flood upon the world, if by turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to ashes, he condemned them to extinction, making an example of what's going to happen." And so some people have said, well, yeah, both Peter and Jude are talking about Genesis 6 mm-hmm. and these demonic beings, these fallen angels who had sex with women on the earth and produced this kind of offspring, which are called Nephilim.
Right. And one pushback I read is that, like, you know, angels wouldn't have human DNA. They're angelic. Sure. But then it referenced Genesis 19, where two angels actually came to Sodom in the evening and spoke with Lot. And they obviously, the narrative is not written as like these heavenly beings or like these right. spirits yeah. came. It's like, no, these two men came who were angels. So that's kind of interesting in a sense. And not to say that they were demonic, but to say the question was like, would those two angels appearing like that not have reproductive capabilities? It's a fair question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Corlin, did they?
I don't know. I think part of the reason, like, personally why I struggle studying passages like this specifically to try and pull out information of, like, who were the Nephilim and what were they and all that stuff is that I don't... Like, I personally struggle to see the importance
sure.
in that. Because I think, they're in the Bible, so there must be something of importance there, right? Like, there's obviously yeah. historical context. There's even just the fact that God was able to create different beings, right? Like, that's incredible and amazing, and I think it is important to be able to know that and recognize that as a Christ follower. Yeah. But I also just struggle to, like, there is not written a ton about what happened. It just says the Nephilim were there in those days and they slept with women and there was offspring.
Yeah.
That's all it says. And so I think we can spend a lot of time trying to dig into exactly what that means and what it looks like. And I don't think God calls us to.
But it's super interesting.
It is.
It's not, this isn't a salvation podcast or like, you know, you have to land on one side of this too.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
have anything, but it's,
yeah.
I think on yeah. one hand, it does show whether these are fallen angels or whether, like I said, the other view is that Seth,
the lineage of Seth, right? Mm-hmm.
Coming from the line of Seth were these, I don't know how you put it, extra wicked people.
Yeah.
Who then did this, or whether it's a group of kings who were kind of seen as divine but weren't really. I think the point of Genesis 6, that beginning part, is to show just how evil the world had become.
Mm-hmm.
So whether yeah. it's fallen angels or people doing this, it's still pretty evil. Like it yeah. says that they saw that these women were attractive and went into them. And so it's not this whole like, oh, we courted for a while and then we got mm-hmm. married. It's basically, I think, describing rape essentially. Mm-hmm. And they just took them. And then the whole point afterwards is that God sees that the wickedness on earth is yeah. great. Every intention of people's hearts is just evil all the time. And then that's why he had to destroy the world with the flood.
Yeah.
So I think on one hand, it's meant for us to go, wow, okay, from Adam and Eve sinning to the flood, man, it got really dark
yep.
really fast.
Yep. Like, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting now that I'm thinking about, just as you're speaking, the intensity of how quickly things got evil was obviously in part due to these sons of God, these sure. men of old,
yeah. mm-hmm.
because God let Noah and his family live, knowing full well that their sin would continue,
uh-huh.
but it's almost as if that sin is redeemable, but we have to wipe the slate from this fallen world
yeah.
so quickly after the fall of man and the Garden of Eden. So that's actually quite interesting to think about, and yeah. I would guess there's a correlation there where God just knew that what was happening, whether it be fallen angels or just, and I in that train of thought, I'd probably lean towards this fallen angel theory.
Yeah.
In that, you know, because these descendants are only going to get worse. Like if these, if we let our mind rest on the fact that these fallen angels who are now full of evil are raping women and they're going to have offspring, like that is just this downward spiral to absolute evil. And that just gives actually more weight to why that decision had to be made to start over and to flood the world.
Yeah, and here's what I find really interesting, and here's what I don't have the answer for. Because it says Nephilim, which most of your Bibles probably have like a little note that says giants. Because I think the Hebrew word
is loosely translated.
Is loosely translated giant. People don't 100% know what exactly that word means, but it can mean giant. But it says they were on the earth in those days and also afterwards.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, what does that mean? Because then you get to Numbers. In Numbers chapter 13, when they're spying the land of Canaan, and the spies go in, and it says, you know, we've gone to, this is Numbers 13, verse 32, basically. The land through which we've gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are of a great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who come from the Nephilim, and we seem to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seem to them. So then you have like, okay, this is post-flood, this is post-Exodus, they're coming to the promised land, the land of Canaan, and they're like, yeah, the Nephilim were there. So you kind of go, and honestly, I've read that, I'm like, I don't have an answer for that, because it says that the Nephilim were there in Genesis 6, and then also afterwards, but part of me is like, wasn't the flood to kind of like deal with that? Like, here they are later on, or maybe, and maybe it's just the same word used to describe, you know, these people are like giants. Yeah, so that could be one answer, that it's just a similar word. Like these people are humongous. And you think about David and Goliath. Goliath was a giant, right? I think it's in the scripture. He's 9 feet.
Yeah. Something like
tall or something like that. So clearly you kind of go, this seems quasi-normal in a biblical worldview. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's giants. And for us, we're like, I know Andre the Giant, the wrestler. He's pretty big. But it was kind of like, yeah, here's Goliath. Oh, yeah, he's their champion. He's a giant. And it's just...
But there wasn't a sea of Goliaths.
Yeah.
In that way. My cousin's 7 feet tall, looks like a giant.
Is he a Nephilim?
He is, the modern day Nephilim.
But here's what's interesting, because that view of like, no, somehow the Nephilim continued after the flood. I heard one scholar say, like, that's why Israel was commanded to wipe out Canaan, because that was God getting rid of, for lack of a better term, these, like, half-breed demonic angel with women giants. And so that's... So he said, like, that's why when we read the story of God wiping out Canaan, we shouldn't think, oh, these are just like innocent people. He's like, no, these were demonic beings. And you kind of go, okay, that's interesting. I don't know if you can definitively say that, but it just adds a, interesting. Like, it says in Numbers that there were Nephilim there, so maybe, you know, it's like Titanic. Maybe they found the door to float on in the flood. Sorry, that is not true.
No, but I've also heard a theory that the flood was more regional than global, and so
interesting.
And again, that's a human attempt to make sense of something that you know you go down a road and then you choose to stop, because if you go further, you're going to be grasping at theories, developing doctrine instead of wrestling with the doctrine as it's presented.
Yeah, and I remember in my like second or third year at Bible school, we would have really interesting debates about stuff like this.
Yeah, we're that group of guys right now that you said would hang out.
Man, we're such losers.
In the lounge, being like, how many angels?
Yeah, man.
How many angels
fit
in the car?
And I found it really interesting to talk about passages like that and wrestle through it, but you're right. At the end of the day, it was just kind of like, okay, people are dying and going to hell, and our job is to like go and make disciples and preach the gospel. At the end of the day, I mean, it's interesting to look at the consistency of Scripture, and there's no, it's not that, you know, they made a mistake or whatever, but it is fascinating to think about this and the biblical worldview and what that looked like. But you're right, at the end of the day, it's like, when I go tell my neighbor about Jesus, I'm not like, oh.
Have you heard about the Nephilim?
By the way, the Nephilim survived the flood. It's like, well, no, we might get to that eventually. But yep. First and foremost, it's Jesus' death and resurrection that matters. But I don't want to swing too far the other way when we're like, you know, stuff like this doesn't matter. Because there are non-Christians and atheists and people opposed to the Bible who will point to stuff like this and go,
yeah,
you have no explanation for this. This is obviously just a fairy tale. And it's like, well, no, we can reason.
Yeah, I think the way that I read it and look at topics like the Nephilim is like, it is proof that the physical and spiritual world are intertwined in some ways, right? There's a connectedness there. It's not like, I think if we as Christians have our own little boxes for like, you know, Sunday is for church and for God, the week is where the, you know, I struggle with this or this, and we just have like our little boxes and nothing ever connects. I don't think that's how God designed the world. Obviously, with passages like this, the spiritual realm and the physical realm are intertwined. There is parts that connect to each other, right? And I think stuff like this 100% points to that. And I think, like you were saying, it points to the brokenness of both of that, because there was a fall of the angels and of man, right?
Yeah.
And so this, I mean, literally the little title thing on top of the chapter for in my Bible anyways is increasing
is
corruption
the
on earth. Not ESV this time.
Increasing corruption on earth.
And that's exactly what you described, right? Like we go from Genesis, the story of Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, we see sin enter the world, all those things, and it doesn't take very long, and then it's like, look at how horrible it's getting, and then the flood.
Yeah.
Right? So I think
I like what you said, like the idea that the spiritual and the physical are very closely related, but I think we have a hard time with that, and that's what Gnosticism was, to kind of separate, you know, no, spiritual good, physical bad, and that was kind of like that idea. And I've even heard that, I can't remember who said it, but there's that famous quote that's like, no, you're not a body, you have a body, you are a spirit, and it's like, wrong, you are both.
Yeah.
But we've put so much emphasis on like, spiritual good, physical bad. And I like what you said, like there is physical good, spiritual good. God made both and they are meant to interact. So even think about in Genesis 19, I think it's when those three visitors come to Abraham. And so these are clearly, it's either, and there's some debate, it's either God and two angels, or some have said, oh, maybe it's the Trinity or whatever. But they appear as physical beings, and they eat with Abraham. And it's not like,
which
you know,
wild.
Those things where they, what show is that? Oh. Where they eat and it just kind of like falls through them.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like that. Like they literally ate. And then I think about in Judges when the angel of the Lord appears and they actually cook a meal and he like eats it. Okay, well, that's a spiritual being eating food. Okay, I don't know how that works, but clearly there's some interaction there,
even the serpent in the garden, right?
Yeah, and the whole point is we get to Jesus who perfectly what's the word, encapsulates, that's not the right word, but he is physical and spiritual perfectly, right? He has a perfect resurrection body. He eats with his disciples, they touch him, and then he disappears, and it's like, what, how did that happen? Right? And so that's where the world is headed, this perfect new heavens, new earth, where the spiritual and the physical perfectly overlap. So I think you're right that this kind of passage shows that it's not, you know, these two realms can never interact because they're so different. It's like, well, no, they do all the time.
They have a common designer, right?
Yeah.
Like, of course they're going to be together, right?
Yeah.
I think what we're even getting at with this, too, is like not to... Like, I don't think we should have huge, huge debates or hate groups around different people that believe different viewpoints on something like this. Because I'm
pro Nephilim.
Yeah.
Nephilim lives matter. Sorry, but, that's...
Yeah.
We'll just cut that out of...
but, you know, I don't think we should have heated debates on this because I don't think it is something that...
Sure.
is of that much importance? Is it something that you can look into and research? And is there clues in the Bible? And by clues, I don't mean the treasure hunt. I mean, like, is there stuff that points to that the Nephilim were real? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And maybe there is stuff that we don't know as of yet about it, right? But I also don't think that it's reason to get all excited about, per se.
Yeah. All right, I think we have talked enough about that.
Yeah.
We solved the mystery. There you go. No, so I think I would encourage you. I mean, it's interesting and good to dig into this kind of stuff. But again, yeah, whether you think it's Seth's line or old kings or fallen angels, I think you can land somewhere and it can be different than someone else and it's not a salvation issue and you must believe that the Nephilim are this or that. Whether or not you're still going to heaven if you follow Jesus and love him. So I think that's at the end of the day is the most important thing. So, All right, we're going to do a couple of segments here. Let me just get our sweet music loaded up. Woo-hoo. Which one? What do you want to do first?
Let's do context is key.
Context is key.
All right. Well, if you are newer to the podcast, context is key is where, and today Corlin's going to do it, where we take a verse, and then one of us takes it out of context, and then the other one properly applies it. So who do you want to take out of context, Corlin, and who do you want to interpret it correctly?
All right, Andrew, you take it out of context.
Yes.
Cameron.
It's kind of fun being a heretic every now and then.
What?
Just kidding. Yeah. Okay, so what's the verse?
So the verse is Psalm 46, verse 5.
What? Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I'm super curious. Flipping there now.
So one of the things I will just say before is that it's kind of interesting because nobody, when they take it out of context, ever quotes the full verse. So for the sake of this, context is key. I am going to read what is most commonly written. And that is, God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. That's what people normally read or write.
I have
the rest of that verse.
I have never heard this taken.
Really?
No.
Can you? Yeah, okay. Well, I'm down to do that. Have you, Cameron?
So
no.
Psalm 46:5, the first part. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. Is this like on a sweater or something? I feel like it's
all over Instagram. It's one of those things where like
she reads
classic.
Truth. Is
yeah.
That, yeah. Okay.
Classic
okay.
White girl thing. It's like on their Instagram, and they just have just that section of the verse written like God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved, as though God has just like come into her and
okay,
just made
so
her an immovable.
It's like
force.
God's talking about. Okay. Okay. I can do it now. All okay. Right. So, do you want me to do it as like Ashley, a typical white girl?
I don't know, you had to throw a name in there for
I was
sure.
Doing my devotions this morning. Sorry, that's so mean. If there's any Ashley's listening, once we get merch, you can have a free mug because of that slam on you. So, God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. Girl, no matter what you're going through, God is with you and you will not be moved. And, you know, your MLM and your, that's the multi-level marketing business that you run out of your house. Girl, you are going to succeed. I shouldn't say this. My wife does that.
You're in dangerous
waters. She doesn't
listen
to the podcast. But I think it means, you know, you can just be confident that, because it says it's in the midst of her. So this is speaking to women, clearly. And she is just not going to be moved. If you are with God and you start your day with him, it's just rock solid. Nothing that comes your way will ever move you, girl. I had to say girl a lot because I feel like that's appropriate.
That was accurate.
Now, yeah. I'm going to get a caramel frap. See ya. Sorry. Oh, man. We're going to get so
you're going to get yourself in trouble here.
All right, Cam. So what does Psalm 46 actually mean?
Have you ever read a poem? I think of studying. For some reason, I remembered Mr. Clausen, my grade 10 English teacher, and we would have, you know, whole seasons on literature and poems and yep. how they're used to just describe something in beautiful language, and you look at Psalms throughout the entire Psalms, these songs, these lyrics describing a beautiful God, describing mercy, peace. The one just before, God is our refuge and our strength, very present help in trouble. Those are words used to describe something literal, and then it can float between, you know, the heart of the sea. Well, does the sea have a heart if you're going to be literal? Probably not. Throw the waters roar and foam. Yeah, waters roar and foam. The mountains tremble at its swelling. Well, I don't know if the mountains tremble. So if you look at it like every line is literal, like, oh, God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. What does that even mean? God will help her when morning dawns. What about evening? I mean, nighttime's kind of tough too. So you're looking at it like wrong. Like it's not that parachute in on that, like, oh, I cannot be moved. Well, actually you can, because throughout scripture, people who have the heart of God are moved, and they have the choice between choosing and pursuing God daily. So again, taking what is someone who never knew that this would be recorded and would be available for us today.
On Instagram.
Writing a beautiful poem, writing a song, just giving worship to God. And if you wanted to think of it a different way, take any song Christy sings on a Sunday morning, add 2,000 years and say that's God actually writing there. It's a worship song, and it's beautiful because it's a part of a collection that has helped us to frame up our image of who God is. But that one line is not God saying, I am in the midst of you.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember, like, feminine pronouns, like, he's talking about God's people. He's not talking about, like, one individual female.
Yeah.
Like, Israel is often referred to as she, her.
Wisdom is viewed as a she
and
her.
Yeah, and so I think it's really God's important when it says, like, God is in the midst of her. It's not speaking about
you.
You know, like we joked, Ashley, Jessica, Sarah. Like, it's her as in God's people, Israel.
Yeah.
So, again, God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. Like, it is. We should go that and go, wow, okay, God dwells in the midst of his people. Yeah, spiritually, we won't be moved.
I think it's one of those that really, it caters to that, I want to feel good and strong. Because literally the verse before has context around what he's talking about. Like, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. Yeah. It's like if God just randomly threw in a white girl into this passage, like, what? Like, it makes no sense then, right? Like, if you have to read it in the context of the psalm itself.
Yeah. That was a good one. Sorry to everyone that we offended. with
if you have a tattoo of that, it's okay. There are people who have tattoos of that verse.
See, that's funny, because once you started talking about it, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about. But at first I was like, this is one
That's interesting. I would have thought for sure you guys would have had more to say nagging-wise.
No.
About it.
See, we're very welcoming at this podcast. So anyways, this has been
Context is Key.
All right.
I just Googled, yeah, the God is an insider. She will not be moved tattoos. And there's a lot of people.
Oh, speaking of tattoos, so I follow a comedian on Instagram, and he showed a picture of someone who got they got their COVID vaccine, but they got a tattoo of like the cellular picture of, you know, what COVID looks like.
Sure.
But then there's like a Band-Aid over it with Johnson & Johnson on the Band-Aid. And the guy was like, are you seriously that excited about your vaccine that you got a COVID vaccine tattoo forever on your... And then he was just going off. Yeah, this one is when I, lost my mom. Just to remember her. And then he's like, oh yeah, this is when I got my first Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Yeah, I wanted to remember that forever. I'm like, oh man, that's forever. All right, so we want to do our next segment, which is
the podcast cast react.
We should react to all of these pictures that people have sent. And it's like,
oh
it's
man,
on the feet or on the side.
Ouch.
Or collarbone.
God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved.
At least put it right in the middle of the stomach or
yeah.
something.
Like yeah, right, just around the belly button. Yeah, that'll look good. All right, so it was funny. Corlin was like, "So when we do react things, is that only to heresy, or can we react?
Can we react to good things?
Heresy's more fun, but we can." So he sent me it's called Devotion. It's a 3-minute clip. So we'll you want us to listen to the whole thing?
Yeah, it's relatively short. Why not?
Okay. And I think this will up our street cred because it's like cool. Anyways.
What is authentic faith? The cultivation of an optimistic outlook on life with a kind of spirituality attached to it? A holy hoping for the best? Is this how you think of faith? Authentic faith is the confident assurance in events not yet seen. Faith is not a call to believe in things when common sense tells you not to. Faith is not a mindless stab in the dark. It is not a crossing of the fingers and hoping for the best. It is not a leap into apparent nothingness. It's a word that speaks of reasoned, careful, deliberate, intentional thought. Thought upon what? God and His promises. If you are absolutely gripped by the coming realities that have been promised to you by God, then how you live your life in the present will be radically different than if you did not possess such certainty. This is what faith is, my friends. Positive certainty expressed in action. Authentic faith is not merely believing in God. It is believing God. Taking God and His word, living in obedience to His revelation, whatever the cost, because you know down deep in your bones that God will always do what He says, that His speaking is His doing. It is an abiding assurance in God and His promises that animates you to persevere in your obedience to Him. Wish to be a more consistently obedient, steadily persevering Christian? A stronger Christian? A more courageous and outspoken Christian? Then you need to strengthen your faith. Your faith instinctively strengthens in direct proportion to the expansion of the object of your faith. You expand your understanding of the object of your faith, and faith itself will obediently follow. The object of your faith, if indeed you are a Christian, is Jesus Christ and all of His promises. Is your faith weak? It is owing to the fact that you don't know the object of your faith well enough. But when Jesus Christ becomes progressively bigger, or better yet, your understanding of who He is progressively conforms to reality, your faith will become increasingly stronger. But how does that happen? By immersing yourself in the faith-arousing Word of God. Read of Jesus Christ. The same powerful Word that long ago brought the universe to life is the same Word that can bring you to life and furnish you with a faith that is truly and authentically Christian.
Goosebumps.
Was that like a sermon that they just put music over or something?
I believe so, yeah. It was from a group called Beautiful Eulogy. That's who put out Devotion. The guy speaking, his name, and I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation, but it's actually Art Azurdia. I've talked about him previously on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, to my understanding, that is like a sermon excerpt that they just put their own music over.
I'm going to start doing that with my sermons.
It's like a sermon jam. Have you guys ever heard of those?
Yeah.
I think it's funny because 100% I bash other like progressive Christians that'll do that. But like when I find good theology or something that's like thought inducing, I'm like, oh yeah, put some music to that.
Yeah, man.
I actually hate it.
Yeah?
I find it like just so incredibly distracting. But that is just a very personal way of learning that I just like... I don't know. I would much rather read that in a paragraph and get that same kind of...
Yeah. It's interesting how different people learn.
Yeah, in different groups of
people. Because I agree. I am not a auditory learner.
Mm-hmm.
I find it actually, because people have asked me before, like, oh, what kind of like sermons do you, like, who do you listen to? I'm like, nobody. I don't listen to sermons.
You read though, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I read a lot because that's how I learn. But some people are like, I listen to 15 sermons a week because like, I don't like to read. And you're like, okay, interesting.
Sure.
See, right? Myself, I can't listen per se unless there's a visual. Like I will watch someone preach, but I can't just sit there and have it playing in my ears or I like get podcast distracted. After. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But I actually really agree with what he said. And it's interesting. We're reading a book as a staff called Another Gospel by Alyssa Childers or Childers. Mm. And it's about progressive Christianity. And she was talking about faith, which is what he was kind of talking about. And, you know, I think I even grew up a little bit in the idea that faith is, it's like a blind type of faith. Faith is like just hoping and believing that.
Yeah. I love what he says when he's like, is faith just a holy hoping for the best? Like crossing your fingers and hoping it's true?
But the idea that it's actually no... Christianity is a reasoned faith. You reason, right? So you think about the resurrection. We look back at eyewitness accounts. We look at the gospels. We look at extra biblical accounts and history. And then you get to a point where you go, I'm going to believe. I wasn't there, but it's reasonable for me to have faith in that. And in this book, she gave the example of a roller coaster. She's like, always had this fear that the roller coaster was going to fly off and crash and land on her and she would die. Mm-hmm. And she went, but then if you do research on roller coasters and the safety checks and like the engineering behind it and the fact that they actually x-ray the metal every year to make sure there's no hairline fractures and blah, 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 blah. She's like, it's still a risk. It still might fly off, but you can have faith based on evidence that it's probably not going to happen. So I was like, that's so true. Christianity is not just, you're crossing of the fingers going, well, I hope it's true. You get to a point where you look at the reason and you look at the facts and the evidence, and then you take that step of faith going, it is reasonable to believe in this. So I actually really agree with what he said.
I do like that he wrapped it up well. If you cut the message in half, the first half would be problematic for me because it was talking about how faith is and if you want it or if you wanted to increase, but then I love how he did close up by saying like the only way to do that is to increase the knowledge of the object of your faith.
Yes.
Because that is what's missing in so much of the faith conversation, because the first half of that devotion could leave someone feeling less than or not good enough.
Yep.
And then to remove that focus and put it back on Jesus as the object of your faith was really, really well thought out.
Yeah, even the idea of like strengthening your faith. And I can't remember who said this, but I've used it before that like faith is not a muscle that you flex. It's a lens that you see through.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what he was saying. Like if you want to increase your faith, it's not like a spiritual workout. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's the object of your faith. It's Jesus. And when your lens of faith becomes clearer and clearer and clearer, that's you strengthening your faith. Where this whole like, oh, you would be healed if you just had more faith. And then we view it as like, okay, well, I got to do these like faith workouts to get stronger.
It'd be strengthening your understanding, and your faith and your action reflects that rather than, you know, trying to get this spiritual tingly feeling that everything that you hear is true.
Yeah, that was good. Even though Cam hated it because he's not hip enough.
Just the old man.
I want you to do that into a microphone the entire 45 minutes I preach.
What? Why don't I just find a clip?
Can I do some interpretive painting on the stage too?
Interpretive.
At the end of the sermon, we'll flip it upside down.
What? I know. I can't believe it.
Some gifted artist who's been drawing for their entire lives makes an angel upside down. Whoa.
I'm gonna do it, but just with a very simple cross and then flip it upside down. Whoa!
The mysteries of the Bible revealed.
Oh, gosh. Anyways, this has been episode 45.
Have a great day, Ashley.
If there actually is an Ashley that listens, message us and we'll give you free stuff because we made fun of you. But hopefully that's been helpful.
Starbucks gift card.
A Starbucks gift card from the church. Our bad. we're just feeding into the stereotype. Tim Hortons gift card. But if you do have ideas for topics or things you want us to talk about, please message us. I'll tell you, it's hard to come up with new ideas.
After doing this, I have a whole new respect for those people that are in like episode 306 of their like daily podcast.
How do you come up with stuff to talk about? So I know we have a few super fans, so please email or text us or whatever.
And if the question is small, we can do multiple questions in one sitting. We don't have to like stretch it out for 45 minutes talking about something.
So hopefully you have a good week, and we will talk to you next week.